Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am joined by Carl.
Hello.
And I'm Josh. So we're going to be talking today about the importance of family, because we at Lotus Eaters always talk about how important a nuclear family is. I suppose that structure is the most desirable one, isn't it? Where you have two parents and some kids, ideally.
I think that's what a family is.
I believe so. I'm not going to have to spend too much time defining what a family is. I think you all know what it is. And this is one of those conversations.
Well, there will be people who push back on you on that and say, are you suggesting that me and my husband and our dog isn't a family? So there yes. are people who push back on that. But if I guess for this, you can just presuppose that it means a wife, husband, mm-hmm. children.
I think people know what you mean by it when you say it, don't
definitely
they?
Definitely going to be people who take exception to that. But that's yeah. I'm not one of them. So
if you use the term fur baby, I'm sorry, you're not a parent. You're a problem, all right?
No, you're a pet owner. That's it. That's the extent of it.
I mean, I like pets, yeah, but don't go too far with it. It's a bit weird when that happens.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes, obviously, we're very clear. We support this sort of thing. But it'd be good to have a look at some of the actual data as well as the psychological literature to back up what we're saying. Because sometimes, although you can support something, the actual nitty-gritty details of it can be a bit elusive. And sometimes you can find something that seems quite cut and dry, and then you dig down deep into it and the nuance of it adds a bit of complexity that you wouldn't otherwise think of. And also, I'd like to say, before I get started, thank you very much to Charlotte for sending across an extensive document with lots of links, some of which I've actually used here. So thanks for sending me that. Hmm. So with all that out of the way, I'm going to cover the findings of two different, meta-analyses. One of them is a comparative analysis. One is titled The Benefits of Marriage and Religion in the United States. I think the United States, when it comes to family, isn't necessarily going to be too unique. So I think you can make generalizations about the rest of Europe. I don't think they're doing anything too wild with family structures.
At least the rest of the Anglosphere. I mean, mm-hmm. the Europeans actually do have different family structures to us.
They have a bit more, they're a bit more similar to the Japanese, aren't they? Some particularly Italians, in that they keep a larger extended family.
Yeah. I should have got this in advance for you, so you could have, it's actually mapped out. We've got, I can't remember the exact terms for it either, but it is a much more individualistic, sort of atomized family structure that the English-speaking world has than the Mediterranean's.
I think it's
much more familiar.
I have looked at the literature on this, and I find that the Continentals in particular are far more open to just spending lots of time with extended family than we are in the Anglosphere. We kind of live in our atomized houses in our nuclear families and don't really see much of our extended families. And this is something that
I don't think is good, actually.
No, it's not good. Yeah. And it's something that I very much try to avoid doing. Yeah. I go out of my way to see family that aren't just my parents and my sister. Mm. And I think that's good for people.
Yeah. When I grew up, I had quite a large family on my mother's side that we saw a lot. But quite a large family on my dad's side as well, since they were further away. And so I kind of grew up with my sort of 14 or 15 or 17, or I can't even remember how many cousins I've got now. And so we all, roughly the same ages. So we all sort of grew up together. I always consider myself quite close to them.
Which is so nice. I think I always would go up to my auntie and uncle's and my gran's house for Christmas and things like that. So I'd actually spend Christmas away to see my extended family. Yeah. And that, more often than not, even though when I was a kid, it might have been the presents, that's the aspect of it that I was most excited for.
Yeah.
It was certainly still up there when I was a child.
Yeah.
And when I was growing up.
I remember some big Christmases myself, and like exactly as you're saying, like, you know, when you're a kid, you think, oh, presents. But actually, when you look back on it, you think, actually, I just really enjoyed being around everyone.
Yeah, I think with a child's mind, you don't necessarily go into it like that, but what you got out of it was very much that. And I also found that I spent a lot of time with my grandparents on my dad's side as well. I would, after school on a Friday, I would go and see them for at least a couple of hours every week for years until I was an adult, pretty much. So
that's good.
It was a lot of effort, but I'm very glad that I did it. Now they're no longer here, because you feel like you really got to know them. And especially when they're quite old, they don't really go out very much. They're very, very grateful for it.
So one of the habits we're in England, which is weird, and I don't know why we do it, is moving far away from your family for some reason. I don't know why. I mean, I chose a university that was miles away from where my family lived. I don't even know why I did it now. You know, it's, why did I want that? You know, but for some reason I did, and, you know, that's what I did. And I don't see why we do this, because, like, you deprive yourself of a bunch of support structures that are just really useful to have around. You make your life a lot more difficult.
Absolutely. I've always been of the opinion that you stay at least 3 or 4 hours away traveling.
That's loads, though. Three or four hours.
Well,
that's a long way.
I wouldn't be able to work in Swindon if I didn't do that.
But that's slightly different. But, like, you know, if you had a bunch of kids or something.
Oh, right. You know, well, if it were your children and your family, not just, you know, your parents or your extended family, then that's very different. I feel like you have more of a commitment to children in particular, that you have to almost certainly be within the proximity of them to be able to...
We just make it very difficult for ourselves, that's all.
We certainly do, yes. Yeah. So I'm going to be going through these two studies. So the first one I'm going to read a small extract from, and then the second one I've pulled out lots of the factors that they've pulled out from findings from other research. And that second one is titled "The Impact of Family Structure on the Health of Children, Effects of Divorce." So one's going to frame things in very positive ways, and one's going to frame them in negative ways, one talking about the benefits of marriage and the other talking about the negatives of divorce. So the impact on physical health, and it says as follows: one of the strongest, most consistent benefits of marriage is better physical health and its consequences, longer life. Married people are less likely than unmarried people to suffer from long-term illnesses or disability. They have better survival rates for some illnesses. They have fewer physical problems and a lower risk of death from various causes, especially those with a behavioural component. The health benefits are generally larger for men, which just to me, that part just says to me that we're just taking risks, and then finally we get brought down to...
I don't even think it's taking risks. I think what it is if you leave men alone to their own devices, then they're just going to drink and smoke.
That's a risk, is it?
Well, I mean, it's a risk, but not like, not going out motorcycling. But I mean, that's probably part of the risks. Mm. But, like, I imagine it's just bad diet, bad habits.
It does make me think about, in the context of things like male depression rates, male suicides... Well, if men are moderating their behaviour to take better care of themselves, it seems to me that this seems to be an important factor in determining men's happiness, right?
Yeah.
It carries on to say, a longitudinal analysis based on data from the panel study of income dynamics, don't worry about that study, a large national sample documents a significantly lower mortality rate for married individuals. For example, simulations based on this research show that other factors held constant, 9 out of 10 married women alive at age 48 would still be alive at age 65. By contrast, 8 out of 10 never married women would survive to the age of 65. The corresponding comparison for men reveals a more pronounced difference, 9 out of 10 of the married group versus only 6 out of 10 of those who are never married.
So you drank and smoked yourself into an early grave.
Yes, exactly.
And and heart diseases, you know, very, imagine what, I can only imagine what my diet would be like if I wasn't married and I didn't have kids. Mm-hmm. There was no one putting any kind of constraints on my habits.
Well, it's the social obligation, isn't it? Yeah. Because it's okay to let yourself down to a certain extent. Obviously, it's still not great.
Yeah.
But it's much easier to do that than to let other people down. And when you have people dependent on you, then you're not only... harming yourself, you're harming other people
as well. And also, if you're not just cooking for yourself, you're more considerate about, like you say, in that way, like more for other people. It's like, you know, my wife doesn't just give me fried food every day for dinner, whereas if I was on my own, well, maybe I would. I probably have done in the past. So,
One thing that always winds me up with this sort of thing is that when you see people who are really overweight and they have overweight kids, and I'm just like, well, you've passed your vices on to your children who are then going to embody those sorts of things, and it should have been on them to, at the very least, not pass it on to their children and give them a positive model. Because I do know people who are quite overweight who then have very healthy kids that are well engaged because the parents understand that, well, I might not be very good at having discipline necessary, but I'm not going to pass it on to children. So it is possible. You don't necessarily have to inculcate your children into your own vices.
It's also just wrong. Like, there's no reason that a child should be obese. Like, children have got so much energy and they're always constantly getting so much exercise. Like, there's just no excuse for it.
Yeah, I don't understand how it can happen. It has to be diet and quantity because I was always really skinny when I was growing up. I made up for it a little bit since. But
then you're an adult. It's it's not your parents' problem or fault there. You know, but like it's difficult to make a child obese just because of the amount of exercise they get.
I know, and you would presume that they're constantly burning off energy anyway. Yeah. They run at a much larger energy deficit than an adult does anyway. Also, moving on to the second study's factors, they say that married people smoke and drink less, which is pretty much exactly what you're saying. Yeah. Married individuals have the lowest incidence of diabetes, hypertension, and heart disease. Married men are more likely to live longer after a diagnosis of cancer, especially prostate cancer. And in a longitudinal study, married men had a 46% lower rate of dying from cardiovascular disease than unmarried men.
It's because they smoke and drink less.
Yes. Yeah. But 46% is absolutely massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
So as a factor in your survival of cardiovascular disease, it seems like family might be the most significant factor.
Well, it's what's preventing you from damaging yourself through vices.
Mm. He carries on to say, married and widowed women experience less intimate... married and widowed women experience less intimate partner violence than divorced or separated women, which is interesting. So I presume that because someone has made a commitment
divorced
to them,
women receive... Well, I mean, maybe that's the cause of the divorce.
What took me by surprise was the fact that they had widowed, but of course they're not going to have intimate partner violence, but...
Yeah, but widowed was... You didn't choose to separate.
That's true, yeah. But it just took me by surprise. Yeah, they're not coming back from the grave. And
men less inclined to beat the people they love.
Yes.
Good to know.
It also says, married people have more civic responsibility, are more likely to volunteer in service projects, and are more likely to be involved in schools and churches. I thought this was a particularly important one because it shows that once you have a family, you're far more willing to give back to the society in which you have benefited up until that point.
Mm. And do you want to know why?
Was that, sorry?
Do you want to know why?
Sure.
It means you've got an excuse to get out of the house and leave the kids with the other parent. I'm not even joking.
I can certainly believe it. There I was thinking, oh, it's a nice optimistic thing. You just want to give back, not I want to escape my family.
Well, it's not escape. It's, you know...
A break.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It's
break,
healthy,
yeah.
Isn't
like,
it?
On the weekends, I'll take my kids out for a walk or something down to the shops. Mm-hmm. Just give my wife an hour on her own, you know, because it's like, it's not easy being trapped with a two-year-old all day.
Because two years old,
like, they are very... They've just learned that they can do things, and so they do everything. And they'll wreck anything, and they can't be reasoned with. So you can't like explain to them, well, this is why you don't do this thing, because they literally don't understand and don't care. And rah. So yeah, like I think that I'm just teasing. Obviously, there are a lot of people who are going to think, you know, maybe I should do something. But I think another part of it is I want engagement with people outside of my family.
Mm-hmm. No, I can certainly believe that. My interpretation of this was that. These are things which would benefit your local community, and therefore, if you're helping out your local community, your local community will help out with your children, potentially
and
in the future as well.
This is why Pete's going to join the PTA, isn't it, at school?
Oh, really? I didn't hear about that.
I think he's thinking about it. I don't think he's done it. But
it's
like,
a good idea.
Yeah, he should. You know, it's only woke nonsense. They can get that sorted.
But yeah, I think that people getting involved in those sorts of things, and particularly getting involved in things like schooling, is very important.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that I wouldn't have got as good a grades as I did if my parents hadn't been directly involved in my schoolwork in particular. I know that's not necessarily what it's getting at, but it's the same sort of mechanism, isn't it? Whereby,
well, it's people who've got a personal and direct interest in the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like some rando who's just been parachuted in, who's just, I don't care either way, I'm just being paid to be here. You know, it's way better than that. It's a person who's actually interested in seeing success. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's much better.
Mm-hmm. And the final one is, in a long-term study of parental divorce, one third of women and one fourth of men felt that life was unfair and disappointing, which is a massive proportion. Yeah. One third of women and one quarter of men, though, It's interesting that...
Women initiate the divorces as well, don't they?
Quite often,
like,
yeah.
80% or something of divorces are initiated by women.
Mm. I think that out of all of the research I've looked at, in the sort of long term, women seem to be more negatively affected from lacking a family. Men can cope with it a little bit more than women, although certainly...
Possibly because they don't have such a long term to deal with it.
That's true, yeah. they do just die younger. Yeah. But I think that there's something going on there that men are more okay with being independent than women are,
yeah.
I think.
Well, it's because they'll drink and smoke and play video games or go to the pub or whatever,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Sounds good to me.
It does sound good. But that's the problem, isn't it? It sounds good, and so you do mm-hmm. it all day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly you've got a terrible heart condition and you die at 57.
I've always been a big believer in just being busy. I find the easiest way to get rid of vices is just not to have time for them.
That's literally why I've got rid of all my vices. I'll have like maybe one cigarette a day at maximum. I don't drink for months on end. Mm-hmm. I don't do any drugs. And it's because I've just literally got no time in the world for any of it.
Yeah, and I think that actually a lot of talk goes on about getting this self-control, but more often than not, it's far easier just to focus on improving other aspects of your life, and these things fall by the wayside in comparable ways to how other things that aren't necessarily virtues or vices do.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly
right. You just prioritise things. Yeah.
That's exactly right. A lot of the time your vices are just a product of boredom.
Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes people forget that. Like people say, I'm really depressed. Isn't life terrible? Well, the first thing I ask them is, how much time do you spend on your own?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it starts to make sense.
Yeah.
That, you're spending a lot of time on your own. You're not really doing a lot. Yeah. Maybe you should spend your time and you'll start feeling better, because depression is in some ways a biological reaction, isn't it? So if you're doing things in which your body responds negatively to, perhaps there's not even necessarily a psychological dimension to it at all.
I spend all my time in my room on Instagram or on Twitter, not getting any sun, not speaking to any people, and I'm depressed. It's like, oh, really? Mm. How could that have happened?
I know, this is...
Maybe if you joined the team at the school or something, you know, you'd be out playing hockey or something, you wouldn't be so depressed.
This is part of the reason that I avoided clinical psychology, because I thought it would just be me stating the obvious.
Being sarcastic to people.
Yeah. It's like, you're depressed, are you? Oh, that's terrible.
Really?
I'd be a terrible clinical psychologist.
Just deeply unsympathetic, yeah.
But yeah.
What's the prescription, doctor? Get out of the house.
Well, especially when me and Connor covered how overprescribed things antidepressants are. Something like 1/3 of all adults in Britain are on antidepressants.
It's probably worse in America as well, isn't it?
Oh, undoubtedly. Yeah. But it's
so bad.
It's the completely wrong approach to that sort of thing, in that you're treating the symptoms of a problem and not the psychological cause, because you're making people cope with circumstances that their body and mind are telling them are
terrible.
Yes, and maybe there's a good reason for that.
Yeah, this is literally making you think, maybe I'll kill myself. And it's like, well, here's a pill so you don't kill yourself, or you can go to Canada and get some healthcare.
I mean, in the short term, it might be good. It might give people the kickstart they need to then make the adjustments to their life. But that's not always the case for everyone. I think it's a small minority.
Yeah, I'm skeptical on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just making dependent.
There is an element of that. I think that there's money to be made, particularly in the States.
There's definitely money to be made.
Oh, yeah. So moving on to mental health and happiness. And I'm going to read an extract and then go into some of the factors. So, recent studies based on longitudinal data have found that getting married and staying married to the same person is associated with better mental health outcomes. So, these are three different studies: Horowitz et al. In 1996, Marks and Lambert in 1998, and Simon in 2002. These are all quite famous studies that I've come across before. Present evidence of improvements in emotional well-being following marriage and declines following the end of a union. I mean, that's unsurprising, really, isn't it? I mean, marriage makes people happy and divorces make people sad. I mean, that's what psychology is apparently telling us. Isn't it useful?
I mean, it seems to be the case from my lived experiences.
Mm-hmm. Marks and Lambert report that marital gain affects men and women in the same way, but marital loss is generally more depressing for women. I think that's that same sort of thing that we were talking about earlier. Analyses that control for the selection of the psychologically healthy into marriage and also include a wider range of measures of mental well-being, find that although there are differences by sex in the types of emotional responses to the marital transition, the psychological benefits associated with marriage apply equally to men and women. So that's quite nice, isn't it? That no one person is benefiting too much, I suppose.
It seems evolutionarily inevitable.
Yes.
But you've got this institution that seems to crop up all over the world. So it seems to be kind of habitual to human beings, this pair bonding.
Worth mentioning as well that in most aspects of psychology, there are evolutionary sex differences.
Yeah. Yeah.
So normally the sex differences are quite resounding as well. So the fact that they are the same in the same sorts of ways, although there are some slight differences.
You could see why this would be the case, right? I mean, they're going to be the same, but for different reasons, right?
Yes.
You know, for women, it's a feeling of security and love and all this sort of thing. For men, it's going to be other things, maybe the same things, who knows? But like, you know, you can see the evolution is going to like, look, this just works for the pair of you. Just sort it out.
I mean, if you were to really generalize and be quite reductionist about it. For women, you could say they have physical and financial security, and for men, they have emotional security.
Yeah.
I think that's one way of dichotomizing it.
Yeah, that's not inaccurate, in my opinion.
So it carries on to say, marriage is also associated with greater overall happiness. Analysis of data from the General Social Surveys of 1972 to 96 shows that other factors held constant, the likelihood that a respondent would report being happy with life in general is substantially higher among those who are currently married than those who have never been married or have been previously married. The magnitude of the gap has remained fairly stable over the past 35 years and is similar for men and women. So,
I mean, like, you live with someone that you love and you think you're going to live with for the rest of your life. Why wouldn't you be happy?
Yeah, and I think
why wouldn't you want that?
I think that it gives people a sense of, like they have a plan for the future, really, in that they understand where they stand, what's going to happen in the future, and if you're alone, you can't really as accurately plan for the future, because realistically, it's more likely to change if you do make a plan, so it makes more sense to go without a plan in that sense.
But also, it's about feeling belonging. I think you know, you belong somewhere. People rely on you. People expect you to be there, and they're happy when you're there. You know, it's this sort of feeling of belonging, I think, is important.
Yeah, I also dislike the use of the term happiness in general. I think looking for something like contentment,
satisfaction,
those are far better. They're a bit more neutral. Yeah. I think happiness is too much of a fleeting emotion. Really,
I agree,
and that. If you take more of a almost a Buddhist view of things, that you're seeking towards peace and tranquility and contentment, satisfaction, those sorts of things, rather than happiness. Happiness implies that there is going to be a deficit later on.
Yeah, this is something that I think is something to do with the English language, though, because we say, you know, oh, are you happy? We don't mean right this second.
No.
You know, what we mean is, in general, are you content? Is, you know, are you satisfied? Are you, you know?
People use it colloquially in the way in which I'm suggesting is healthier.
Yeah, but it could be, you know, I'm happy today and I'm sad today, you know. When they say happiness, I think they do mean over a period of time. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. I think what it means is contentment.
Yes. I think that's how people would interpret it. And just three of the kind of bullet points of some of the research findings. Married men are less likely to commit suicide than men who are divorced or separated.
Contrary to all of the comedy that was made in the 1970s.
I think there was a decade or so where comedians just relied on being in a miserable marriage for all of their material. And I don't think it did anyone any favours because... No. The divorce rates peaked in the 1980s, and thankfully...
All the boomer humour about women and marriage is that marriage bad, and it's like, turns out that's not true. And it turns out that the young people now don't even get the jokes.
I think that part of that sort of boomer humour is understanding that actually this is good for me, and it's a bit of a light-hearted thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of complaining about the minutiae of it.
I mean, don't get me wrong, as a married man, I do take the privilege of complaining about women constantly. That's only because I'm married.
it's kind of a blokey thing to do, isn't it, really? Complaining about marriage, even if you're perfectly happy.
Yeah, it's part of dealing with your lot in life as well. Because a lot of the time you have to make compromises to your wife that you don't really want to do, but you have to anyway.
I think there's also a bit of sportsmanship about complaints and how funny you can make them.
Yeah, that's totally true.
So, carrying on to the final two. In only 10% of divorces did both partners feel they achieved happier lives, which is tiny.
That's remarkable.
Mm, it's quite concerning, really, isn't it? And the final one is 1/4 of older divorced men remained isolated and lonely afterwards.
I'm surprised it's only 1/4, to be honest.
I know. I think there's one thing that I've very much noticed in British culture is that particularly in pubs and specific pubs, you get the same sorts of old men in there all the time. And I do feel very bad for them because I when I was a pub manager, there was a guy who was in there every day. And he said to me, well, I'm basically killing myself with drink, but I'm not even here for the alcohol. I'm here for the company.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a shame that people have to go to a pub just to have company.
But at least there is a place they can go for company.
That's true.
Conversely. Because without it, maybe they'd be sitting there drinking themselves into a depression at home.
I think young people should be more considerate that old people actually do really need someone to talk to. And it was something that when I worked in the hospitality sector while I was at university, I was very conscious of because I had a very good relationship with my grandparents and understood that it means a lot to them to have interactions with people who are outside of their regular circle because they crave the same social interactions as anyone else. If anything, they're probably more nostalgic for times gone by where it's kind of pre-internet age, and you could just go out and have a chat with people. And I think it's something that I miss from being in a more rural area is that you can be at the bus stop and have a chat with someone and be nice about it, particularly if they're old. They're more likely to be interested in that sort of thing. And I think that as someone on the younger side, I wouldn't say I'm a young person anymore necessarily, it's something that I try and go out of my way to do, to have these nice conversations with old people that you don't know because they value it. And it's
often they're incredibly based.
That too. So this next one is probably the least surprising of them all. It's economic well-being, and it reads as follows. A large body of literature documents that married men earn higher wages than their single counterparts. This differential, known as the marriage premium, is sizable. A rigorous and thorough statistical analysis by Karenman and Neumark from 1991 reports that married white men in America earn 11% more than their never-married counterparts, controlling for all of the standard human capital variables. Between 50 and 80% of the effect remains, depending on the specification, after correcting for selectivity into marriage based on fixed, unobservable characteristics. So, to explain that in other terms, there's still a significant effect size once controlling for variables in which the researchers couldn't necessarily identify.
Married men have got a distinct incentive to work hard and get promotions.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've got people dependent on them, haven't they? It's not just about them anymore.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Other research shows that married people have higher family incomes than non-married, with the gap between the family income of the married and the single women wider than that between married and single men. I mean, that's not really surprising, is it?
No.
In addition, married people, on average, have higher levels of wealth and assets. The magnitude of the difference depends on the precise measure used, but in all cases, is far more than twice that of other house types, suggesting that this result is not merely due to aggregation of two persons' wealth.
Hmm.
So that part is the most interesting part in that, I think. That it's not just that you've put two persons' wealths. I'm not sure if that's the way you say it, but you've aggregated your wealth together. It's not just that that gives you a disproportionate benefit. There are other things on top of that. And I presume that would be your obligation to your partner and to your children that motivates you to go above and beyond, as well as the fact, I imagine, that when you're having a family, you're probably in a stable job. You might be getting further and further in through your career.
Mm. But also, it's about the money you spend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because my wife is constantly going, can we redo the bathroom? Can we do this? I'm like, oh, God, no. But it means that I'm not just pissing that money away outside of our property. And so, you know, as much as I might complain, it does increase the value of the property. Mm-hmm. And so that is our wealth going up.
So I can certainly imagine that you make more prudent financial decisions and you focus on things that are more of a long-term investment in your future.
Yeah, I'm a massive Scrooge. That's what you're asking, yeah.
I mean more generally. I didn't mean you specifically.
But... Oh, I mean me specifically. Well, I was like, can we? And I'm like, no.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.